Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra concludes its season with a program devoted to arguably America's greatest film composer, John Williams, in a program titled Simply Cinematic. Williams, through his classic scores with filmmaker Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, have helped create a soundtrack for a generation through his music for Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the Harry Potter films, and of course, the Star Wars saga. The orchestra will perform many of these scores, plus lesser-known works from The Terminal, Lincoln, and Jurassic Park, this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapin Music Hall. My guest today is guest conductor Ron Spiegelman, who's a frequent guest with the orchestra. Spiegelman was formerly the principal pops conductor for the Fort Worth Symphony and music director of the Springfield, Missouri Symphony. Today he's a frequent guest conductor as well as music director of the summer festival Lake Placid Sinfonietta. In fact, next season, he will be the conductor for all of the TSO's Pops concerts. And he joins us today as our guest on Studio Tulsa. Ron Spiegelman, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
John Williams' music, when you think about it, there are a handful of film composers where the music immediately gives you images from the film.
Absolutely.
Bernard Herrmann is one.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Korngold.
Oh, my. Kind of the king,
yeah,
almost.
Right, Korngold. Right. Yeah, but, and Jerry Goldsmith at times, but I don't think any of them more consistent than John Williams. You know, when you hear the music, you see the movie in your head. Mm-hmm. That's a particular skill, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's his true gift. He, John Williams, the composer, when you hear his music that is not film music, you would have no clue that that is the same composer, which says to me that he literally does compose for the image on the screen. And there's a really great YouTube clip you can actually see of he and Spielberg working together to compose the theme to E.T. He's at the piano, and it's obvious that Steven is watching the real-to-real projector on a screen, and John saying, how about if I go up here? This, you know, and he literally does compose with the director and to the image and really sort of hones in on character. And I think that's why it's such a unique talent that he has. He isn't just writing music. He really is through composing and completing the character in the film.
In a lot of ways, you know, musicians sort of have a love-hate relationship with film music a lot of times. But
sure. But
I really think the best film music is the same as playing the Alpine Symphony of Richard Strauss
totally.
Or any piece of music where there's this explicit program. And this is probably the most sort of explicit program.
I totally agree. And it's interesting because when you hear the Alpine Symphony, Zarathustra, some of these great tone poems, that was their sort of goal. They didn't know at the time that it was really cinematic. Was what they were doing. They were trying to paint a scene to put the listener in the moment, what is happening at a waterfall on top of a mountain. So what John Williams does is he takes all of that and then he amplifies it even further from what is actually on the screen. And he looks at it and he goes, okay, I know how to envelop the audience. In fact, I think he truly takes something to an extreme, which is the idea of movies in 3D. I think he believes that the music is the third dimension. It gives the scene, the atmosphere, the action, the character, all of its depth. Now, for example, think about it. Darth Vader from, I'm going to do the Imperial March, of course. Now, if you watch his entrance and you take the music out, no one is scared at all. In fact, I jokingly refer to it as somebody who is respiratorily challenged walking around in a Halloween costume. You know that, but then you suddenly hear bom 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 bada, and then you are terrified. It's like the villain has arrived. And then he takes it even further, where even when he is mentioned and not even on the screen, you hear that music and you immediately think, "Oh my, he's close." See, so he creates that feeling of character just by its sound. Again, Superman flying around without that music, it's a guy in tights flying around. Kind of funny, but then you put the bum 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 bum, and then suddenly it's like, wow, we are actually flying with him. That's how he does it.
Earlier, I mentioned that musicians sometimes have a love-hate relationship with film music. Why do musicians oftentimes get a little jaded when they're talking about playing film music? And especially with John Williams, because a lot of times he is somewhat derivative, and I think he uses that to good effect for the movies.
I think part of it is film music, in one sense, can put people in a box. Because when you do this music, you don't necessarily interpret it. You reimagine it. You recreate it. It's not like a piece by Beethoven or Mozart or Mahler, where you take liberties and use the parameters he gives you, where it's like, it can't be slower than this or faster than this. But somewhere in there is the sweet spot. Well, the sweet spot in John Williams is how it goes. Like, when you do the music, you can't push it too far outside of the lines, because then people think, well, that's not really how it goes, because everybody knows it. Yeah. And I think there's an expectation in the audience for that. And so I'm guessing that musicians kind of feel like, well, part of their work here is simply to kind of do a carbon copy of something that's already been created. However, it's still musically very satisfying, and certainly in the rehearsals this week, people have been expressing that. And we have made a point of doing some music in this concert that is not as familiar to musicians. So when you do John Williams, you're going to do Raiders, you're going to do E.T., you're going to do Star Wars. But we're going to do Star Wars. We're doing something from every film, so 1 through 6. So there are a couple of pieces in there that when we rehearsed it the first time, everyone was kind of looking around going, well, I don't know if I remember that one. Because it wasn't necessarily one of the iconic signature moments. But I wanted to make sure that we had every film represented. So.
But, you know, even in 2 and 3, you know, there's leitmotifs that pop up that he would create where, you know, a thematic theme that goes with a character that keeps popping up.
And it's funny you should say the word leitmotif, because I think Star Wars was sort of referred to as a space opera in a sense because of its scale, which is interesting. If you think about, you know, a science fiction blockbuster and you think of an opera, well, you would think the blockbuster seems to be more of a huge element. But no, the idea of opera in this case is that absolute power, say, that Wagner introduced from opera with the just the heavy subjects and the scale of which, you know, he wrote. And I think he took the idea of leitmotif from Wagner, who didn't, let's face it.
Right.
And yes, episode 1 and 2, you'll even hear it in the pieces that we're doing. Wait, that's a little of Darth Vader's theme. Because guess what? Anakin becomes Darth Vader. So, oops, did I just spoil it for everyone? hands up if you haven't seen this. And he does that. And I think by design, it's brilliant. And it's something that I think he tips his hat to. John Williams is interesting in that he tips his hat. I don't think he ever thought or ever even thinks today that what he wrote was necessarily original in its thought. It's certainly original in a lot of its music. And what he does is he pays homage. So in the main theme of Star Wars, you hear that climax from the planets. In the love theme in Superman, he directly quotes Strauss' Death and Transfiguration, because guess what? That's what Superman is about. So he pays homage to the great composers. And one composer that people don't associate with John Williams, but to my mind he quotes more than any other, is actually Sergei Prokofiev. If you listen to his love themes, it's very reminiscent of the Romeo and Juliet love theme. And if you listen to the Parade of the Ewoks, if nobody told you that John Williams wrote that, it sounds like Prokofiev actually did. It has that same kind of spiky, dissonant, cheeky, kind of wonderful, balletic kind of feel to it.
We think it as being cute, but if it was Prokofiev, it would be sarcastic.
Absolutely. And that's what it really is. And so, you know, that's the thing about John Williams. He's just a great student of music. You can tell that he understands the greatness of the composers and that he's not trying to emulate. He's trying to say, here you are, and I'm going to add something around you. But at the same time, I'm going to look at that image and work out how I can make it come to life.
Now, you mentioned earlier that when you play his concert music, you would not think it's the same composer.
No.
Sometimes when he's on assignment, he doesn't sound like the same composer. And I'm thinking in particular of a piece that you're going to be doing, the Suite from Lincoln, which is the composer in homage there is Aaron Copland.
Oh, there's no doubt that Aaron Copland is very much present and alive in his mind when he wrote the music to Lincoln, as it should be. If you think about it, Aaron Copland kind of defined the American sound when it comes to writing about our land. So if you think about Appalachian Spring and Hoedown or Rodeo or Billy the Kid, you got a certain vernacular that became synonymous with those stories and the sound. So John Williams, not wanting to change that, but to add to that, definitely channels Copland. And it's a really wonderful score. I when I first heard it, out of context, it's a little bit different to say the other movies. Because in Star Wars, he writes characters. Superman, Raiders, they're all about the characters. In Lincoln, you're not necessarily seeing the theme of Lincoln. What you're hearing is the theme of what Lincoln represented, which was freedom and the freedom of the slaves and the troubled times that he lived in. And so that's the music you're hearing. It's sort of it almost like creates the landscape of the movie. So that's the departure he had, I think, with some of the other scores that we're doing. But I wanted to do it because it's fairly new for John Williams, and it's always great to get a progression of a composer.
And you're certainly doing this in this concert.
Mm-hmm.
What's perhaps the earliest score that's in the program?
Probably the main theme to Star Wars. That was, 1977?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that is probably the earliest one. We recently played the Cowboys Overture on Guthrie Green. That was 72.
Right.
But we're not doing that in this program. So, yeah, I would say that's the earliest score. And it's funny because we're going to end the concert with that. But that's kind of like the signature moment. Like if you're going to say, okay, sing me something by John Williams, that would be it. So we're going to kind of hold that to the end. But we're jumping around, which is great. I mean, Schindler's List was 93. We're even doing Victor's Tale from the Terminal. That was
I was going to ask you about. Somebody who, you know, that's a score you might not even think of as being a John Williams score.
It's not. But what we try to do in this program is some features from musicians from the orchestra. So that will be David Carter playing the clarinet solo. You'll have Rosica playing the Schindler's List. You'll have Tim McFadden playing the trumpet solo in Lincoln. And that's the other thing about Lincoln is that the trumpet is so prominent because it's like that call to freedom. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that we featured musicians. And then, of course, we're going to do some music from Harry Potter. So, so we are really jumping around on the years that he wrote this music. But it's exciting stuff.
And we were talking earlier about musicians. One thing I think musicians like about it is this music sounds so effortless, but it's really challenging to play.
It's extremely difficult.
The strings especially, they're like working their fingers off, and it's like you can't even hear them because of the brass.
Well, and that's my challenge. I want to make sure that we can hear them. And luckily, we have a large string section, and they're right at the front. And that's what's great about seeing this live is because you have a greater chance of hearing it because on film, it's all homogenized into some speakers. But live, you hear that whole spectrum of frequency. And so you will hear the strings. So they're practicing really, really hard. Because we start the concert with Hedwig's theme from Harry Potter, and that is fiendishly difficult. But the idea is that, okay, this is a subscription concert. So we want to make sure that it's challenging in every way, but ultimately satisfying. So, and I think something that's ultimately satisfying is rising to a challenge. So that's what this concert is about. And that's what all the films are about. You know, it's funny. What's interesting is Steven Spielberg, of course, and John Williams, I think, are one of the great pairings in all of the history of film.
I think the only one you'd compare would be Hitchcock and Herman.
Hitchcock and Herman or Bogey and Bacall. You know, it's to that level, in my opinion. And because Spielberg doesn't make a movie without John Williams writing the music. It's pretty much, I think, since Spielberg's first movie, I believe he's pretty much composed music for every one. And then when there are sequels, you know, other composers take some of what John Williams did, and I'm sure there's a collaboration there. If John Williams isn't writing the whole sequel. Although we are doing music from The Lost World, from Jurassic Park, an incredible section where the dinosaur is running through the streets of L.A. It's such a great section. It's, again, extremely hard. It features the percussion section heavily. But, yeah, there is this amazing thing. When Spielberg was asked in his Inside the Actor's Studio interview, you know, how do you come up with doing these films? Do you take what inspires you? And Spielberg said, no, I take what scares me and I humanize it. And I think John Williams himself takes that approach as well. He says, how can I personify everything that's going on here? And it's truly remarkable stuff. And, you know, it's a personal history. When I was a trumpet student, when I was, I think, 9 years old, the first piece I learned to play was the theme to Star Wars, the play on my own. And I remember standing in my front yard one morning playing it because I was so proud that I could do it. And we got a letter saying that I was disturbing the peace. I wish I kept that. Anyway, but the point is that it's been with me my whole life from a very early age. Before I learned a piece of classical music, I learned a piece by John Williams. But here's the kicker. In my opinion, what isn't articulated very much, and that is he didn't write anything with amplified instruments. I mean, there are occasional special effects that you'll hear within pieces, but when you hear the music of John Williams on the stage, you're hearing what you're hearing on the screen. He is a traditionalist when it comes to the orchestra being able to paint a picture better than anything. So when I talk about John Williams, I think, you know, he's a true composer because he uses the instruments at his disposal to create everything. And that's why I think, you know, the orchestra is still so relevant for that reason alone.
Yeah. My guest today is Ron Spiegelman, who is guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's final program of the season devoted to the film music of John Williams. Simply Cinematic is the name of the program. It takes place this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall, and he's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. When you're putting together a show like this, what's the thought process in sort of getting those different things that you want to accomplish on a composer like Williams?
Part of it is a process of elimination because there are so many, I mean, he's written so many films now. There are so many great highlights. And the challenge that we took upon ourselves in this program was, well, if we're going to do Star Wars, there are all the signature moments from Star Wars, but why don't we do something from every single episode so far? Because number 7 is coming out. I'm sure there'll be music for that. There's no doubt. So that was the challenge on this program. How do we go 1 through 6 and do sort of a chronology, but also introduce some music perhaps that, you know, pushes the envelope a little bit where people are thinking, wait, that was in episode 2. I don't know if I remember that, but maybe now they'll have a new appreciation for it. So that was the concept.
Well, you know, on that whole suite that you put together, mm-hmm. the first one from the first movie sort of defines that trilogy, that, what is it, the Duel of the Fates?
Duel of the Fates. Yeah. Which was the big saber battle between Darth Maul and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
It's an incredible saber duel, but it's that concept of, okay, well, we know what happens in episode 4 on that duel. This is kind of the first time that you see this. And so I thought, what a great way to start. Let's do something exciting and powerful. And so that's why we decided to start with that.
Yeah, but 2 and 3, as you mentioned earlier, so, you know, you had musicians looking at each other, and it's interesting music, and there's all this little Star Wars tidbits that are sort of pop in, but it's completely different in a lot of ways.
It really is, and in the score for episode 2, where we're doing the Across the Stars, which is the love theme. Mm-hmm. With Anakin and the Queen, and the idea is that this is their first meeting, and even though it's a beautiful love theme, you just get a little moment of Darth Vader's music in there, and you're like, ooh, okay, I know that. Wait, and even if you haven't seen the film, you're thinking, wait, something's interesting is going on here, and when you're watching the movie, you mightn't catch it. So I'll probably mention it and just say, you know, you might just see a little bit of that evil starting to grow in here, even though this is a beautiful love theme.
Yeah. And there's another piece you're doing, which, you know, usually you hear Leia's theme, and you have this another piece called Luke and Leia, which has a bit of that theme in there, but it's a very different sort of take on it.
Well, why I chose Luke and Leia's theme is because it's about a relationship with brother and sister. When you do just Leia's theme, because there is a movement of Leia's theme, what you're essentially doing is a part of the main title, because it's in the main title. But Luke and Leia's theme is not. So since we're doing, of course, Star Wars, the main title to end the concert, I figured, okay, it would be kind of a shame if we heard that theme already and not just, you know, let it all hang out with that main theme. So I thought, Luke and Leia, let's do that theme, because it's really superb and it's so beautiful, and it's kind of that growing of that sister brother bond because they've been separated, and I thought, well, this it's about relationships. Let's do that theme.
Yeah.
And so in the first half of the concert, like I said, we're jumping around, and the idea though is that we can put everybody in the moment, because they'll have all seen these films: Harry Potter, Schindler's List, The Terminal, not as popular obviously, Superman, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and sort of have some fun with it as we bounce around the heroes and the villains, because we're doing some of Schindler's List as well, which is a very personal film, and it's personal to me because I have family history with the Holocaust. My father was a Holocaust survivor. Mm. And we're just kind of, I don't know, running the gamut in a sense, and the progression is really the second half, doing Star Wars almost consecutively. The first half we thought, let's jump around and just change the mood and make it interesting that way.
Now, Ron Spiegelman, you are pretty a frequent guest with the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
Now, I guess next season you'll be, I don't know if it's there's an official position, but you're going to be the pops conductor as the symphony switches in there. Now, are you having more input with the musicians? Because the musicians are sort of famous for picking programs, but...
Actually, yes. I mean, there's definitely more input. I had several meetings about the programming coming up for next year, especially in regards to the holiday program, because I have a lot of experience with holiday programs. And so I pretty much gave them everything that I thought would be appropriate. And then it's pared down, and then we'll go back and forth. The idea, though, is that it's a collaborative thing here.
And that's
I absolutely love that.
I would think some conductors say, well, I like it my way.
that reminds me of a famous line that a choral director once said to a tenor section that was being a little ornery and trying to ask questions. And he said, okay, I'll compromise. We'll do it my way. No, I'll be honest with you. One of the first things that I do whenever I become music director somewhere, I'm not here, but in other places, I'll do a survey of the audience to find out what they like to hear. But the orchestra will also do that survey, and we'll see if we can pair that up, because I feel as though there has to be a level of satisfaction, simply because a musician has spent, decades perfecting their art. They practice every day. I would like to think that they have a chance to come to work and say, you know what, I kind of put my hat in the ring to say, could we maybe do this piece? And I think that that's a really admirable thing to be able to collaborate that way, to say, okay, yeah, you know what? I haven't done that in a while, and it sometimes reminds me of something I haven't done in a while. And I think, let's try it out and see how it goes. And I like that idea because it's like chamber music in that sense. It's like when I look at someone and I'm rehearsing them and I know that they've helped me pick the program, they have a vested interest because it's partly their idea. I very, very much like that. I don't subscribe to the whole maestro theory. You know, they select programming based on, their... I don't know, they channel the composer's energies and, Mahler spoke to me and it's like, no, they didn't. What we need to do is decide how we put things in context to make it relevant, satisfying, and give homage to the war horses. And the reason I say that is because, I'm not a conservative in terms of programming other than, yes, we need to keep playing those signature works that people absolutely love, because the war horses are the horses we rode in on.
Right.
When you go to the Louvre in Paris, you're not going to be real happy if they said, you know what, we shut the gallery with the Mona Lisa because we thought it was time for everybody to look at everything else. It's like, you know what, here's how that works for me. I go there to see the Mona Lisa, and since I'm already there, I'm going to look around, and I will see everything else. I think the symphony concert's the same way. You have to give people the meat and potatoes.
So even if you have a big pop star as your pops guest, you're still going to hear a warhorse to at least some point on that program.
Yeah, and even if it's a pops warhorse, I think to myself, the thing about pops, what I love about pops is that you're playing music that people love and know, and you do it in a way that if you can tell a story. And I love telling stories. I actually hope that one day we'll do a program that I created, which was all about Route 66, because I know, of course, it came through here. It comes through here, and where I live in Springfield, Missouri, it was a co-founded by Springfield and Tulsa. So I have a program that I've done in several places, and I adjust the program according to where we are. So if there's a local element to it, we put more of that in there. I feel like... You've got to kind of do the stuff, do the music that people know and love. And then when they trust you, the audience, that's when you can introduce something new. And you don't do it as I am standing up for modern American music and you're going to like it or you're not going to like it, but I'm going to do it anyway. I say, no, I do it a different way. Let's build trust with the audience so that one day what they say is, rather than the Tulsa Symphony is doing a concert and they say, well, what's the program? I would rather they say, oh, the Tulsa Symphony is doing a concert. I'm buying a ticket because I know I'm going to love it. And the way you do that is to build the trust from the audience. And that even if you do something new, you're taking them on a journey and you're doing it for a reason and purpose, not just to do something new for the sake of it. So, yes, I'm all about war horses, but in context. So if you're going to do something about fate, you'll do Beethoven Fifth. But there's all kinds of other pieces that you can introduce that they may have never heard before. That relates to the theme. And they'll be like, makes sense to me. And they give it a listen in that context rather than a random, like, we're doing this because we got a grant, you know. No, we got to respect the fact that they're there and they gave us their money to be both entertained and perhaps educated, or they're bringing a date, or they just want to have a great night out, or hear great sounds, or hear a melody they once knew. I pay homage to all of those people because in my mind, they're all equals. And so I know I'm going on a kind of philosophical rant here, but with a program like this, yes, you're going to get Star Wars, but because you know you love that, I think you're also going to love Victor's theme from the Terminal, which you probably won't recognize. But hey, we're here and he wrote it and wow, it's actually kind of cool.
It is a cool piece, yeah? Actually.
So it's the whole idea of bringing people on a journey.
Ron Spiegelman is my guest. He's guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's final concert of the season, devoted to the music of John Williams, Saturday night at 7:30. And I know tickets are going fast. And there are only a few left. It's at the Chapman Music Hall of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Now, you do have one other conductor that you're involved with a lot of orchestras like here in Tulsa, but you do have a orchestra in Lake Placid.
Placid, New York.
That sounds like a good place to have an orchestra.
Especially in the summer.
Yes.
Not so good in the winter.
No. Unless you like snow.
Of course. Actually, the Lake Placid Sinfonietta is a 21-member chamber orchestra that has been in existence since 1917,
wow,
making it one of the oldest orchestras in America, and we think the oldest chamber orchestra music festival. We're celebrating a centenary, and we're currently almost at the point of announcing a great commission from one of America's preeminent composers. But I go up there every summer, and we do 6 weeks. We do approximately 20 or 21 concerts in 6 weeks. It's a very intense schedule. And we only have single woodwind instruments and brass instruments, except we have two horns. And so everything we do is kind of arranged. And I do some of that.
Wow.
And they have a lot of pre-existing stuff. But it is a tremendous group. And Michael Nicholson from the Tulsa Symphony actually came up last summer and played in the violin section. He's coming up again this summer. So there's a Tulsa connection. So if you happen to be in the Adirondacks, and let me tell you, it's a beautiful place to be in the summer, come and see us because I'll be there. Really, as we start the first week in July and end the second week of August. It's six pretty full weeks of performances. And we do six classical programs, six pops, and then we do a bunch of runouts. We play right on Mirror Lake on Wednesday nights if it's not raining. It's absolutely gorgeous. But again, it's one of those things where we do a festival, we always have a theme. And it's really been terrific. It's my fifth season there. I just absolutely love going there.
All right. We wish you success this summer.
Thank you so much.
And Saturday night.
Yeah.
So, Ron, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Conductor Ron Spiegelman speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He'll be leading the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in a program titled Simply Cinematic, a program devoted to the film music of John Williams, which takes place tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. For ticket information and information about the concert, visit TulsaSymphony.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. We're going to leave you with a little flying music from E.T. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.